Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast episode. We will have the full crew on later on in the episode. But for now, we're starting things off. Pernell is here. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm in lots of pain, but I'm making it through, baby, and I got my coffee. Let's get this party started.
I have a cat trying to eat my pen.
Don't let him do that, otherwise the cat will be in lots of pain and the show will not get started.
Exactly. And the show has to get started because we have a special guest joining us this episode, Enrique Cortes of Super Awesome Hyperdimensional Mega Team, back on the show. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, hola, everyone. Hello. It's super good. It's really nice to be here again. Thanks, guys, for the opportunity. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you back on. We had you back on many years ago. Talk about your previous game, Rise and Shine, and now you have a new game coming out called The Night Witch. Same beautiful hand-drawn visual style, but a whole new genre. For the people who don't know what The Night Witch is, give us the sales pitch. What is this game?
I think someone from Twitter actually defined the game really well a couple of days ago, and he said it was a bulletvania. Yeah, so it was like a mix. Bulletvania. Yeah, what you know? Yeah, it's like a new genre by itself. We just invented it, you know, and we didn't know all that. it's kind of a light bullet hell mixed with Metroidvania, and also some card, you know, card managing deck building mechanics. Just in case there is something missing in there. that's the dish we're cooking for you. It's something like that, yeah.
And there's something worth noting there too, because prior to coming on here to do this interview, I was trying to encapsulate what this game was and then try to think about what other games are like it, because that's my usual shtick. I always feel like everything's been done in some capacity, so I try to find like titles. And to be perfectly honest, I really can't think of one that plays like this one does, which is odd to say in 2022, but I'm also glad to be saying that in 2022.
There was someone actually on Steam forums asking the same question. It was like, hey, you guys, do you know any other games similar to this one? And I was, you know, I was reading the thread on Steam. I was thinking, oh yeah, good luck with that. And pretty much, you know, some people were saying games like, you know, Aquaria and stuff like that, but they are not exactly the same thing. We have a pretty unique mix, I think.
Yeah, I would say the closest, and it's still, there are still leagues between the two, but the closest that I've played that has similarities to this is like probably something like Scourgebringer or something, and even that's a stretch. So you got a good product on your hands here.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a good mix, and we hope we made a good job with the game too. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So Pernell, this is your first experience with Super Awesome Hyperdimensional Mega Team. First off, what do you think of the company name?
Well, the company name is fantastic. You're not doing it right, though, unless you say it in one breath.
Dude, I've been sick all week. Give me a break.
Judging you personally, I'm just stating a fact.
You're mean to me.
That's not true. That's not true.
You're so mean. I'm sick.
I love the company. this is how I roll, baby. Nah. But like, I love the company name, and I genuinely like, if this is the style that you guys use for all of your games as far as visuals go, you got a winner on your hands there too, because it's a very beautiful product. And when you guys were talking on the pre-show amble regarding the other game, Rise and Shine, Joe made a comment that said that it was a very similar visual style to that game. When we talk about other games you guys have done later, you're definitely have to give me the spin on that, because I want more of this look and appeal. Very bright and colorful, but also frantic. It's just the way I like it.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, we've been doing games as a team for a while already. You know, we started on 2010 with our first game on mobile called Pro Zombie Soccer. It was a very punk, you know, fun game. But it was, you know, our style has been there since the beginning. You know, it's basically our personal style. We just pick up paper and pencil. That's what, you know, comes out. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't look for anything else apart from that. So, you know, very cartoony, very colorful, fun. A little bit of anime here, a little bit of American comics there, and yeah, that's our mix. That's what you see pretty much all our games. Yeah,
and what I like about the use of color in the Night Witch is it's just the backgrounds, the color of the trees, the way things pop from the background. I just think it's a beautiful game, and I love the style.
Oh, thanks a lot, man.
And maybe it's just me because I'm like, kind of, I'm still early on, but don't worry, by the end of this weekend, I won't be so early anymore. Because, but the visuals here, a lot of people, when they play games or they're making games and they're picturing, they need a game that has some serious undertones for the narrative. It's gotta go for the gut and make you feel something or whatever. They always feel like that needs to be accompanied by dark, brooding colors, or rather a lack of colors. And just like a world that always like it's about to decay at any minute, you know, whereas this game, from what I can tell so far, there are some hits of like, you know, melodrama and emotional weight. Yet at the same time, despite all the things that are happening on the screen, the beauty of the imagery doesn't go away. It just adds to the experience, which more studios could probably take to heart when they want to make these gut punch narratives.
Right, right. Yeah, no, the story is a big part of our game, but we also wanted to have, you know, this exploration to be, this exploration side of the game to be meaningful too. So, you know, in Metroidvanias, exploration is very important. So we wanted to add to that, to, you know, respect to other games. We wanted you, as the player, just to keep going to the city that you're exploring and feel that, you know, something different is coming up of you as player, you know, every time you go into a new room, you know. So we try to put a lot of work in that, just to make every single room beautiful. I mean, every single room is being done by hand. I mean, we haven't done anything procedurally or anything like that. We wish. It's been a lot of work.
I'm gonna tell you this right the hell now. I get that it makes it easier for you, but never wish for procedural, because I will always go to something that's been handcrafted over something that's procedurally generated. I'm kind of tired of the procedurally generated because it sounds easy and it's easy to put on the, you know, the sell sheet. Thousands of combinations. It'll never be the same game twice, but it loses something in the process. It feels, I don't know, like almost formulaic in that sense. Like, I don't get the feeling of like truly exploring, because I can't be like, okay, I mapped a course. This room was here. I can chart a route to get back to this place to do the shopping, to buy myself a cupcake armor suit or whatever. but in this game, I can do that because you guys handcrafted the map areas. I know this room will always go there. If I die and come back, it's still going to do that. It's meant to be this way. And that's a good feel to have in a game when you're playing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, nothing. I have nothing against, you know, procedural generation at all. I mean, don't take me wrong. That's cool, and super difficult to get actually right. You know, the games that have that feature, you know, kudos to them, because it's a very, very difficult feature to have in your game, absolutely. But in our case, we like, you know, to make everything by hand, just handcrafted, just to have every single pixel that you explore in our game just to be handcrafted by us, just to be designed by us. So we control your experience, you know, every step of the way, to be honest. And yeah, I think it's worth it, you know. Makes your exploration more meaningful, I think, in my opinion, yeah?
Yes, 100%. Because, like the game Scourgebringer I mentioned earlier, Joe can attest to this, but I absolutely adore Scourgebringer. Yeah. But it is also, but it is procedurally generated. So I'm not knocking.
It doesn't have the same charm. Like, in a hand-designed game, everything has a purpose.
Yes, that's exactly it. Like, sometimes
you don't have, like, bullshit, stupid rooms that mean nothing. I mean, you can, if you want to be a dick to the player, which is always fun.
But we won't even know that.
We won't know it. We'll get to that room and be like, oh, there's something here. And then we'll come back like 4 hours later and be like, there's seriously something here.
Yeah. No, in our games, we try to do that, you know, like having every single room you explore, but not every single one, but some of them have like a single element that you haven't seen before, and you won't see in the future anymore, because that's one single thing that will be only in that room, you know, like a statue or like a, you know, a sunken ship or stuff like that, that is only in one room in the whole game. And it's just for you just to find, you know, and to explore. Yeah.
All right, so one thing, I guess we should, before we talk anything more about this game in particular, we should probably get a general pitch of what the game is about from your mouth to our ears. So how would you describe this to someone who's never played the game before, and you don't want to give too much away?
Okay, I like to call it, I don't know, I mean, I kind of tired already about, you know, about buzzwords, you know, it's a bit, you know, this industry is always relying too much, I think, on buzzwords. So for me, it's like an adventure, you know, when it's a shoot 'em up, adventure, RPG, deck building, as we said before, you know. So basically, you're a night witch, and there is something going on in your city that you need to try and save the day, pretty much. Yeah, but as a video game, you know, it's a lot to explore, a lot to level up. You'll be shooting around your way, managing your spell cards. I don't know. I'm doing a super awful job just selling my game.
It's okay. There's a lot to say without saying. Yeah. I get it.
Thimber actually has a question that could lead into that. What exactly is a Night Witch, and where did you get the idea for the character?
Well, that's a good question, you know, because this story. It's based, actually, you know, in the Second World War, there was like a squadron made out of Russian girls in the Russian army. And they were given, you know, the worst planes, the cheapest ones, the oldest ones in the whole Russian army, just because they thought they didn't know how to pilot them, being women. So they wanted to use them as a cannon fodder, pretty much, you know, for the Germans to shoot them down, you know. But these girls were super clever. And what they did was they were disconnecting their engines while they were flying towards their mission, so the Germans couldn't actually see them, because they also were flying in the night, you know. So Germans actually didn't see them coming at all, didn't hear them coming, and when they were super close to the Germans, they were, you know, dropping the bombs around. That's why they were called the Night Witches, you know, the witches that come in the night, you know, because Germans were terrified of these girls piloting super old planes from Russia. And at the end of the war, they were like they had the highest survival rate in the whole Russian army, you know, because they were super clever using what they have at their hands, you know. And I read about this story, and of course, instead of Night Witches, I added a K at the beginning of night, and yeah, now they are the Night Witches. And yeah, sorry for being so cheap, but I was fascinated by this story, and I wanted to add that, you know, to our game somehow. So instead of planes, they fly around themselves, you know, because they're magic. And yeah, that's the idea for the Night Witch concept.
That's
actually
a cool history.
And I gotta say, hearing that now adds a fair bit of, you know, extra interest to the mythos here, because I don't think this is a spoiler. This is literally the beginning of the game that they convey this, but the Night Witches are the heroes of the people, and they're supposedly empowered by the faith the people have in them. And you can picture, from hearing your story about the Night Witches, the Germans were afraid of them. I'm assuming that the people they were supporting were also enamored with the concept of what they were doing. It's like they would just come out at night and they just make these crazy runs, and everyone just believes that they can do it, which probably emboldened them to do it more. So
yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah, yes. I mean, this game is actually, you know, a product of the pandemic. You know, this idea came to us while we were at home. You know, our government in Spain we were indoors, because we weren't allowed to actually go out when the coronavirus was out and about at the time. These 3 months, I guess you guys had it too, the States. So yeah, that was a nightmare for all of us. And I remember, you know, people at 8 o'clock in Spain, everybody was coming out to the balconies and started to applaud, you know, really, really loud. That was for the people working on the hospitals. You know, they were giving out their lives, risking their lives for everybody. So, as a homage, as a thank you, everybody was, you know, going out to the balcony at 8 o'clock. The whole city, the whole, you know, the whole Spain, the whole country, and started clapping, you know, for the doctors and nurses that were actually risking their lives for everybody. Also, you know, people that were, you know, delivering stuff to supermarkets, people working in supermarkets, all that people was risking their lives for everybody just to keep civilization going, pretty much, you know. So, I thought at the time, you know, it was like, all right, I'd like to say thank you to all these people risking their lives for me. So I can go to the supermarket, you know, once a day. I still can buy groceries, you know, to be able to survive at home, you know. And I thought about the importance of saying thank you, and I wanted to translate that into a game. So that's why the core mechanic for you to level up as a Nightwitch is when somebody says thank you to you. When you get a thank you from some NPC that you do something for them in the game, that's when you get level up. That's when you get Link that, you know, is used to level up your character. So that's where it comes from. It's kind of a pandemic product, to be honest, this game.
It's crazy to see the things that we've gotten from the pandemic, like as much damage as that has caused, like everywhere, everyone, the artistic creativity that we've seen come out of people just being home alone and letting themselves flourish and seeing what comes together with other people online. And it's really cool to see the products that have come from the pandemic. And if this is one of them, like it's jaw dropping to see the work that went into this and how beautiful of a game the end product is with such a dark cloud overhead.
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, you know, everybody had a super bad time when we were just, you know, closing our houses, you know, in our flats, and it was a bad time for everybody. But as you said, you know, something good came out of that sometimes, you know, and that was beautiful, to be honest. Yeah.
Like I know friends who've started bands, online bands, because of the pandemic. They would just be like, oh, hey, I'll do bass, you do drums, we'll get another guy to do guitar, and they have an online band, and you know, some of them are getting together to actually perform now, and it's crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Here in Spain, you know, one band was, you know, got famous because of the pandemic, and they were just playing online every day, and they got so famous that now they're a hit, you know, they perform everywhere in the country. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Jinx.
I'm the host. My voice came first in the recording, so I win. You owe me a Coke, Purnell.
How do you get a guy a Coke who has every Coke known to man already? I don't even know where to start.
I'm drinking my candy corn Mountain Dew just for today with you, Purnell.
Wait, what? That's a thing?
Yeah, the 2019 Voodoo.
Oh, okay, Voodoo. Yeah, you gotta confirm that, because I forget those sometimes. So
Soda Talk with Joe and Purnell. Enrique, are you a soda guy? Do you what kind of beverages do you enjoy in your spare time?
Oh, I'm a tea guy, to be honest. I like green tea. Yeah, hey, yes. Yeah, so boring.
No, it's not. Tea is where it's at. It's refined and delicious.
And classy, right? It's like, yeah, we're super posh.
That's right. Pinky out.
You actually drink your tea with the pinky out or not?
It depends on where I'm at when I'm drinking it, but I do like a little pinky out tea consumption session every once in a while. It feels
fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic, yeah, absolutely.
I think it comes down to how big the cup is and how big the little handle on the cup is. Like if you only have two fingers on there, the pinky kind of just goes out, but if you've got to use the whole hand...
That is true, but by that same token, I have large hands, so most of my cups have that problem. But it just makes me feel good. I'm like, yeah, I'm enjoying my tea. It's very good. And like, I got my coffee, jittery arms. I'm like, yeah, you can have that. Except on a work morning, in which case I'm like, you know, I'm okay with it. I can go down the coffee for that purpose, but I'm a tea guy at heart. Rooibos, right. Baby.
Awesome. High five, man.
High five across the pond.
Well, speaking of free time, what are you doing in your free time? Are you playing anything good lately?
Oh, I just discovered Vampire Survivors.
And, oh my God.
Yes. Oh boy.
Yeah. Yes.
We have lost you already.
Yeah.
That game is soul consuming in a good way.
It should be declared like a drug and be made illegal or something. Yeah, oh my God. Can't stop playing.
That's the funny thing about Vampire Survivors. It's like, it's a drug for sure, but people clearly realize how potent it is because there's different strains of it now in the form of every other damn Vampire Survivor-like game that came out after that. Like, it just exploded. And they're just getting the game on, I guess, iOS and Android, according to the Game Awards or whatnot. But there's, like, multiple copies of this game now. And I'm not sure if any of them have eclipsed Vampire Survivors yet. Like, have you come up with a favorite weapon in the game or anything like that?
Oh, I love garlic. Garlic all the way, man. For now, but I have like 5-6 hours into the game, so I'm not that far away. But so far, garlic is all the way for me. Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, I will say one thing I recommend. I haven't done a ton yet. Like, I made like all the weapon combos or whatever, but look out for the white and black birds. Like, they seem stupid at first, but stick with them. Those jokers got me my first like 45 minute run. Like, it broke the game in a good way. But yeah.
All right. I will say same thing with garlic, man, but you have to level that up like a lot to actually be really useful. But yeah, when you get to that point, yeah, it's just like, yeah, let's go to have a tea while the game plays itself. And then, yeah, it's just that level of broken, you know, the garlic thing.
I like when you evolve the garlic and then also have the evolved Bible with it. So you have like the spinning wall of death. And the black hole of life absorption, if you make it past the spinning wall of death.
Basically, like, no one's coming near me. I'm invincible.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah,
it's speaking of which, related to this game, now I think about, we're talking about Vampire Survivors. One thing I like about what you did here is that, so Vampire Survivors in itself does have, like, the bullet hell stream at times. Like, you're avoiding everybody, and the weapons fire themselves for the most part. In this game, your weapon does not fire itself. You are in charge of firing those shots. But what I like is that you have that instinct shot that's in the game, where if you're not the most familiar with bullet hell games, or you're more focused on concentration of not getting hit as opposed to doing damage, you can just hold down the gun button and your character will just fire the gunshot at the nearest enemy until they die. But if you find yourself feeling, you know, cocky, like, you know, screw this, I can aim my shots, which the game allows you to do, it actually incentivizes you by giving you a little bit of extra oomph in your shots. And then the last part of it that I noticed is that every once in a while you'll have, like, an object that you can interact with on the board, like exploding barrels that if you hit them, they get launched skyward, and they can do a lot of damage to enemies. Your instinct shot won't target that. So if you want to pull that off, you have to actively aim for that. So you have to be still aware of your environment. You can't just go into and be like, I'm just going to close my eyes, let instinct shot do all the work. Nah, you got to play.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, you know, shooters like this are, you know, it's a really hard genre, usually, you know. It's like a very hard... usually the games are super hard. So also we have this... cards, the spell cards. So we wanted the players to actually, you know, free the minds of the players a little bit with the aiming, and just leave that in automatic if you want to use it that way, you know. So that because, you know, when I was doing this game, I learned a new word, and that is supposed to be used a lot in game design, which is called the mind share. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. I didn't in the past 20 years and doing games, but I learned it with this game. And you need to be really aware of the mind share of the player, you know, not giving players too much to do at the same time, because then they will implode and hate your game and leave you with a super bad review on Steam. So that's not what you want.
Because I have heard the concept, but never heard that term to describe it. I didn't know there was a specific way to refer to it, but mind share makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. So we want to free the minds of the players a little bit with leaving the aiming on the side. If you want to aim, fantastic, that's up to you. But if you don't, then you can shoot, and, you know, you can aim automatically, and, you know, and just think about your spell cards and become a killing machine anyways. So yeah, it's up to you.
And speaking of the spell cards, I do have a question about how those function too. So in this game, you get, again, like your game mentioned, you get spell cards, which you can equip And as you play, you'll collect energy orbs, which will power up the charges you can use on your cards. And different cards require a specific number of charges to invoke. Like the machine gun requires 3 charges. You burst those out, boom, period of machine gun fire. However, I wanted to ask, when you use a spell card, does the next one come up in the order of which you have them lined up in your deck, or is it randomized? Because
it's randomized, yeah.
Or it is randomized?
It's randomized, I'm afraid. Yeah, it's like a usual, your usual, you know, game, the card game, yeah, that you're used to play probably. It comes randomly. So you can, I mean, you still can do your deck, you know, in the style you prefer. Yeah, you can fill it up with weapons only, or you can fill it up with, you know, more destructive cards or whatever. But you can actually have repeated cards in your deck. So, you know, you have a lot of, I don't know, machine gun cards, so you will get in your hand more often, obviously. Yeah, it's just based on that.
Oh, okay. And I'm totally, don't get me wrong, I'm totally cool with the randomization, because like you said, it's a deck builder in the truest sense. You're drawing a card. You're not lining them up in a pre-established order. So I am totally cool with that. And trust me when I tell you, stun cards are very useful, so I flood my deck with those.
This feature has been like, we discussed a lot internally about this. Also, we were super afraid, you know, because we didn't know what people would think about this, because it's quite a brave design decision, I think. You know, everybody's used to have, you know, their cars, like, they don't move from their slots. You put your cars there, but they won't be moving at all unless you move them out of there. But this time, every time you use a card, as you said, disappears and a new one takes its place. And that's something that we didn't know how people would take. Because design-wise, I can tell you right now that it's a good decision, because it lets the player, you know, adapt to each combat differently. If you had the same cards in there, it would be super boring, I think. You know, combat, yeah, okay, then you want to use this one, and this one, and this one, again and again and again, until I kill everybody, and, you know, next room, and that's it. And in my opinion, you know, that detracts a bit of the fun you can have with this game. So we thought, yeah, let's make them random, so players can adapt to each situation. They can make their decks up, you know, based on their preferences in play. And then, yeah, each combat is approached differently, I think. And that makes the game more fun, I think. But not everybody is happy with that, I can tell you that. It's a very brave design decision, I think.
I feel like in the end, you'll probably catch more flies than not with that mantra, because it's almost like an actual deck builder in that sense, where ultimately a person's either going to just have like 6 or 7 unique cards that they'll just be comfortable with getting when they come up, or they're going to just go, you know, kind of like how like a Yu-Gi-Oh style, where it's like, you know, I have these 6 cards I really want to get, or these 3 cards I really want to come up. So rather than have 6 card types that vary, which means I have a 1 in 3 chance of getting this card or of these 3 cards, I'm just going to say screw it and make all 6 cards those 3 cards, but 2 of each, and now it just reduces the odds. You'll have less options, but you'll get more access to those options. So people will adapt in their own specific way, but in the end, from this person's perspective, I think it's a lot of fun, and it adds a little bit of panic to the game too if you're not doing the more streamlined deck selection. You're like, I need the axe. That's not the axe. What the hell? Especially when the bosses come up and the bullets and chains start flying every friggin' where. It's a good time.
I think it keeps things fresh. Yeah, absolutely. No, sorry. I was gonna say that we think that keeps things a little bit more fresh. Yeah, and in your combats as you encounter them.
I was gonna say, for the people who struggle with bullet hells and twin stick shooters, I appreciate that you guys threw cheats in the game.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's something that I wanted to do from the beginning. Maybe I don't know if we actually choose the right word with cheats here. I don't know. Maybe they should have called, I don't know, difficulty options or whatever. But we like the cheats. We like to use the cheats word because we know it has a kind of a negative connotation with hardcore players. So we wanted people to use cheats only like the last option, like your red button, you know, of death. So you wanted people to keep trying in you know, wherever they were stuck, until they couldn't take it anymore and thought, okay, I'm going to use cheats now and go through this and that's it. But also apart from that, lots of people have been having a lot of fun with the game anyway, just using the cheats from the beginning. And yeah, if you struggle with bullet hells, as you say, or you don't like to aim with, you know, double stick shooters and stuff like that, yeah, just go activate one cheat, like, I don't know, like enemies dropping more health, and or enemy bullets going slower, and that's it, and go enjoy the game and go enjoy the story, because there is a lot for you to, you know, to have fun with, absolutely.
I like that you have to find the cheats too. You have to unlock them. I found a few on my own. I was just dicking around with the icons, and I found a few myself. And the one that I unlocked where enemies drop health, that was the game changer for me. I went from struggling with the game to just doing good and enjoying myself and getting through things and surviving. So I love that there's options like that in the game. And I love that I was able to just figure it out on my own.
Now, I want to ask this, though, because like the concept of the cheat code menu is a throwback to like classic 16-bit games where it had those weird cheat menus in them, which is really awesome, like Joe said. I also like that, as Joe said, you can technically brute force them if you really want to sit down and like brute force all the codes. If you're not a brute forcer, are they like hidden throughout the game, like maybe in the background or like maybe collectible objects? Like, how do you generally come across the cheats in the game if you're not brute forcing them?
Oh yeah, you will find them in the future, you know, as you progress in the game, you will see them. I don't know, I don't want to spoil anything to you guys, but yeah, the game will show you the cheats at some point, for sure, yeah. And they are just like a Google search away, so no difficult
at all. Yeah. I heard you flat out said it, just Google it if you need them, they're there.
Yeah. No, but the game will show them for you, no worries, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and also the music, whoever was in charge of the musical score, they get kudos there as well. I am a very big fan of when the battle sequences happen, because the rooms that you go to in this game, there are sometimes corridors, sometimes they're like big square rooms that have different sections in them, and sometimes it's just a very small room that's enclosed. But every once in a while, you'll come across a room, and they will seal you in, and monsters will just start spawning all over the place. And when that happens, the music changes to a tempo to definitely increase the pressure that you should be facing during this situation. And I really do like that, because otherwise, lots of the music is very like, even though you're in a, you know, tumultuous situation, there's lots of the music is like relaxing, atmospheric, and then the wave start comes like there it is. This is what I signed up for, the chaos. So you did a great job there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the music guy that worked with us, he's been working with us since the beginning. He's Damian Sanchez. He's in charge of all the music in our games, you know, since day one, pretty much. And he's a master. He's the sad thing, unfortunately, this is the last game he will be working with us, because, you know, a bigger company than us snatched him, sadly. And he's working now with Crema Games on, I don't know, you guys know Temtem? Like a Pokemon game. Yeah.
Oh, Temtem, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing the music for that one too, yeah. So Nightwish, sadly, was the last one for us, yeah.
It's kind of funny you said, because I like the music in Temtem. So connect the dots.
Yeah, exactly. No, Damian is a master. He's fantastic. He's such a good musician. He's incredible.
So, like you said, like, what are some of the other games that you guys have worked on? I know earlier you mentioned Rise and Shine, which I guess I could use some context on that bad boy. What are some other games you guys have done before Nightwish?
Okay, yeah, as a team, or in 2017, we released Rise and Shine, as you said. And before that, we were on mobile, actually. That's where our beginnings were, since 2010. So, yeah, we made a game called Super Magical for mobile platforms. And also, our first one was Pro Zombie Soccer, also on mobile platforms. But before that, I was working, me and my partner here, the other artist in the game, we've been working, you know, in a lot of different companies around the world, to be honest. We work on Pokka games, on Plant vs. Zombies, the original one. we work on Worms 3D, on Team 17, and yeah, the circle closed because they are publishing Nightwish now. we work on iToy games for Sony. We work on SingStar. We work on Buzz. So yeah, we've been around for around 10 years working on different companies. And then in 2010, we founded our company. Yeah.
Okay.
That's really cool.
Well, I can definitely say I'm going to be looking back on like this Rise and Shine. And I want this game to be a freaking boost for you guys in and of itself. Like, I saw Nightwish on the eShop, just perusing it, because I am a sucker for just like looking at what's coming soon or whatever on that thing. And the Nightwish just stood right out to me. It was an immediate draw. And I was like, hey, Joe, I'm going to buy this game, so I'd rather just ask to see if we can review it before I drop the coins. But I was prepared to already buy it. It wasn't even a matter of if. It was a matter of which method was I going to get it with.
So now you're going to gift it to someone, right?
No, I'm poor. Kidding me? I need to save where I gotta save where I can save. That's why you do what you do. But this game is already freaking quality. It stuck out to me on the eShop and it is living up to the hype that I gave it for myself. So,
and Purnell hypes things up a lot. When he gets into things, he'll hype it up big time.
Thank you for that, and he's not kidding either. I was at a convention a couple weekends ago for board games, and it's a board game that I really was enjoying. A friend of mine designed it, even so. Out of nowhere, the publicist of the game was like, just looks over to me in the middle of a crowd and goes, I have no idea who this guy is, but he seems to really like the game. Are you enjoying it? I was like, this game is fantastic. And then, like, I followed up with another line. Some lady just out of nowhere goes, stop shilling. I was like, I'm not shilling shit. I like the game, asshole. But, like, when I like something, I lay it on thick because it deserves to be praised in the manner of which it was. Like, I don't want, because it's easy to be like, this game is terrible. Everything's bad about it. But people don't generally give enough kudos to things they actually like, because it's easier to complain. So, I mean, yeah. I hate saying that, but it's true. So, I like giving the praise to games that I really like when I can. So, and this is a hot product.
All right, thanks a lot, man. And you know, creators really, really appreciate you guys, you know, saying out loud that you like what you play from us. And yeah, it feels fantastic. And as you say, you know, it's not so hard to say, yeah, I like this thing and put it out there instead of, you know, putting out the negative reviews and this game is bad. That's what you see the most out there, and that should be the least, to be honest.
Exactly. Yeah.
See, even when we do give negative reviews, like, we try to focus on the positives and try to say what we could do to fix it. So I like to think that we're a more positive outlet as opposed to some of the others out there that just like to enjoy putting out negative stuff.
Yeah, and that's fantastic, because, you know, we us creators just live out of a little bit of praise, man, please. Just a little bit, because you work so hard on this and that, you know, and you know, sometimes you only hear, you know, negative things and bad things about your work, and, you know, every time you hear someone, yeah, I enjoy your thing, and, oh, man, it's you know, you feel super warm inside, you know.
Yeah, another thing, so thank you. I've noticed this, too, like, in the industry in general. Have you ever noticed, right? So, we, Joe and I and others on this show, we play a lot of games throughout the year, which means we have a fairly decent context of like a scope of game quality, you know, from rough to spectacular, what have you. But I notice a lot of times people will just play a game that might have maybe an inherent flaw here and there, but otherwise it's okay. But they always come at it with, this is the worst game I've ever played in my life. This game is abysmal. Why did they even let it out of development? I'm like, is this really the worst game you've ever played? Because if that's the case, you need to play more games. I don't know what to tell you. This game is not that bad. it's not even bad in many cases, you know?
Absolutely. But even, you know, in websites like Metacritic and stuff like that, you know, in these kind of websites, even when you have like a 7 in like an average review score, it's displayed in a yellow color, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very different from when you are, you know, more than 7 is in green color, which means, yeah, you can buy this game with confidence and stuff like that. But, you know, a 7 and down from there is yellow. So it's like, seriously? It's like, does this mean that this game, for having a 7 of average review scores, does it mean it's bad? A 7? I mean, when I was in high school, a 7 was, you know, that was awesome for me. You were like, oh my God, a 7. And now in the games industry, it's like, oh yeah, a 7. That's, yeah, mediocre. You don't buy it. You're like, oh my God.
It's funny you say that too, because so in the U.S. in the school system, maybe not so much in colleges, but in the elementary schools and middle and high schools, we had this weird distorted view of how the numbering system worked. You had like 90, I know in like Virginia it was like 90 to 100, but my school was like 93 to 100 was an A, like 85 to 92 was a B, 75 to 90 to 84 was a C, and then like anything below a 70 was a fail. So it was like, it's like there's this whole 100-point system, and you pretty much invalidate 70% of it to just be like, why even have it? Yeah. So when you look at
sense.
It doesn't. So we look at the video game score system. It should be 50% is average, like, or 5 out of 10. Don't think of it as 50%. Think of it as a 5, literally out of 10. 5 is average, which means most games should fall under average, which means it's still good if you're okay with that gameplay concept. It's just not going to be like, blow my freaking mind. Never in my life have I done a play a game like this, you know? And that's fine. You need an average to have an above average and a below average.
All right, but, Purnell, you're talking numbers. We don't do numbers on the show, so I'm going to force you to pick a number 1 to 10 on this game.
I mean, that'll be fine. I mean, keep in mind, I haven't played it enough to give it an official verdict yet, but so far I would give it like an 8 easy because, I mean, it is above average already. I can tell you that right the hell now. It gives me that experience that feels unique in its own way. Yeah, Chris isn't here. We can't do it. But it gives me this unique vibe, and the gameplay on top of the unique vibe is fun. It's not just unique for unique's sake. It is a good game. The characterizations are well done. The graphic style is well done. The music is well done. Like, there's been nothing that I've done yet in this game that made me go, man, they really could have done better with this. It hasn't happened yet, and I hope and expect that it won't, which is good. So but with that said, though, even if I were to say something like, you know, I've played bullet hell games in the past, and I've played many that have done this mechanic better, but this is still fun to play. I'm enjoying myself, which means if I were to give it in my numeric scoring, like a 6 in that regard, that would still be good. It's above, slightly above average, which is fine, right? But like we were talking about, people like to hear 6 and go, what the hell is this shit? I would just like $5 on Steam.
Exactly. I can tell you, you know, as a gamer, I've enjoyed so many 6s and 7s in my life.
I
couldn't even finish that list. I mean, I enjoyed so much, you know, games that were supposed to be mediocre for the press. And they were, for me, you know, pure enjoyment and super fun and no problem all that, you know. And I remember for me, it was like, you know, in Edge Magazine in the UK, you know, they gave Son of the Enders 2. I don't know, you know, that game, you know, from Hideo Kojima, one of his first game in Kojima. They gave it a 4 out of 10, right?
Wow.
And that was, oh my God, what is this? And I just was, you know, I picked up the game that day from the shop and I was playing. And when I finished it, I couldn't even believe that review. It was like, this is not even close to a 4. It's like a 9 easily. Lots of games like that in my life as a gamer. You know, I enjoyed so many games that were supposed to be mediocre or whatever, you know, or average that I couldn't even finish. You know.
Now here's another element to that you mentioned. It's a good that you made that comment, because a lot of people forget this too. So That guy wrote a review. He gave it a 4 out of 10 or whatever, right? A lot of times, people don't go to read the context behind the review to justify the score. Instead, they go, he gave it a 4. Fuck that guy. This is actually a 9. And the chances are, the guy probably had a game assigned to him that may not even have been his cup of tea. Or maybe it was a game that was really difficult. He doesn't play difficult games, so as far as he could get was the first boss. And this game is, I can't do it. This game frustrates me. 4 out of 10. In which case, the guy reads this and goes, I like difficult games, though. This guy being frustrated makes me want to play it more. Go play it, and suddenly it's like a 9 for you. So it's like...
Speaking of feedback, what's the weirdest feedback that you've gotten for the Night Witch so far? Like, what's the weirdest review someone's left?
Oh my God, I can tell you. I mean, talking about reviews, I mean, we have like a 8.3 on Metacritic right now.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Very nice.
It's a fantastic average. But we got one review from one site that, you know, thankfully is not counting towards the Metacritic average, because this guy gave us like a 2 out of 10.
Damn.
He was like, yeah, and he was like, why? And reading that review, it was like more political than really about gameplay. And we thought, okay, and so this game, this guy hated the game a lot, you know. But about or the worst review, I mean, not the weirdest review we got was on Steam from a guy that didn't recommend our game. And one of his reasons were like the main protagonist was a woman in her 30s and married. And he couldn't, he couldn't identify. Yeah, he couldn't identify with the main character. So, yeah, that was one of the main reasons for the for him to not recommend the game.
He was a game having a character that got above adults, got into adulthood. What the hell? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Oh man, what you say,
bro? I don't want to be an adult yet.
What you say to a person like that, dude?
And that's why we give Final Fantasy games with 16-year-old second degree generals.
Yeah. Over here I'm like 41 years old and I'm like, ooh, I get to be in my 30s, yay.
Right. Like, absolutely. In my opinion, I want more games where characters are in adulthood. It's like, I've had this chat with people in the past where I was like, why is it that so many Japanese games have their characters in their teen years? No matter what, anime, video games, it doesn't matter. They're almost always teenagers in these like extreme situations. And people generally came to the realization that maybe they just feel as though once you become an adult, your life is over. And I'm like, that's like 4/5 of your life. It's adulthood. So to think that the only part of your life that matters is like the first 18 years, that's really depressing. So more games when you're actually doing stuff.
Yeah. But for us, you know, we've been amazed that, you know, lots of people have commented, you know, on reviews or, you know, on Twitter, on social networks, that they were, you know, greatly surprised and positively surprised that the main character is happily married. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, we haven't seen a character, you know, that is married and is happily married with someone, and his husband or wife doesn't get killed in the first 10 minutes of the story, you know.
And I'm going to say
the usual thing, you know. Yeah.
It did take me back. Like, add some emphasis to that, and I'm glad you said it, because I didn't even come to mind till you said it, but it did take me back when she's like, I gotta meet my husband. I'm like, wait, what? This is different. No love interest in the game. She's already got her love. There's no love interest. It's love attached. She's settled. And
even at the beginning of the world.
Exactly. And her man, because things, he gets worried. They have the moments where they're worried about each other and stuff, which is nice. And it's not necessarily damsel in distress mechanics. It's literally just, this is just what the situation calls for, which is reasonable. Nice. Is a good match, but he said that, and I didn't even encapsulate that until he made the comment of it. But it's a good point.
Yeah. No, but it's so surprising that, you know, in the game industry, there are not many examples of, you know, happily married main protagonists in games. It's just, I don't know. We weren't expecting that, because for us it was like something normal we're putting in your game, you know. Yeah, let's make our main characters be married to this guy and they have a healthy relationship. And that's
it. Does
he
die? No. Is he infected with a virus? No. Is he on his deathbed? No. They're just happily married. What?
And also worth noting, without spoiling anything, another thing worth noting about that is that they are happily married, but the game makes it clear that they have different perspectives on specific things without saying what those things are. but it's not like this great rift between them or anything. Some kind of like weird narrative yank. It's literally just, we think about this differently. By the way, go shoot these targets. It's nice. I made them for you. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, let's go for dinner afterwards. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's just, yeah. And people are surprised. We are amazed that people like it. The most part of people like it. But we weren't expecting that this was like so something completely new. That people were surprised to see in a game. It was, all right, maybe it's not that common at the end of the day, which is, it's incredible.
Oh, man.
It's a good thing.
So what's coming next for Super Mega Team? What are you guys going to be focusing on DLC for this? Are you going to take a break? Do you have new projects in the works? What's next?
That's a good question. There are no DLCs planned for now for Nightwitch, and we are working on something new at the moment. Yeah, we are working on something new. We cannot tell you about it yet. Hopefully, very soon. But we are on to new waters. Yeah, as we speak. Yeah.
Well, when you're ready to talk about it, you know where to come. So.
Yeah, I hope to be here back again in 2 years' time for sure.
You're definitely welcome back here. You make good games, you have a good personality, and you're just fun to chat with. So,
well, thank you.
Yes, we love having you on. I know we've been chatting for a while, so we should probably wrap this up. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Not really. I think you guys, brought up a lot of good stuff. I just want to say that if someone is hearing us, please, people, buy your game. You're going to like it. It's not so difficult as it seems. you like it. Please buy your game.
Well, tell us.
Sorry for the spam. Yeah.
Where is the game? How much is it? Give us all the details.
Oh, yeah, you can find it pretty much on all platforms under the sun. Not on Game Boy yet, but you can find it on, Xbox One, PS4, Xbox Series, PS5, on Nintendo Switch and on PC. And on PC, you can find it on Steam and in GOG.com. It's pretty much everywhere. And right now, I think it's $20, if I'm not wrong. Lots of gameplay time, like 20 hours plus. You want to get 100% of the game, go for it. I mean, there's a demo also on Steam you can try out if you are on the fence. Please buy it. Thank you.
Oh, man. Enrique, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. We love having you on. Please come back again sometime. Everybody else, we're going to take a quick break. We are going to be back with more show. Purnell, stick around. I know you got a lot of reviews to take care of. Enrique, do you have any final words before we let you go?
Just say, you want to say thank you for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure. And hope to see you in a couple of years' time, right? When your next thing is out. So, thanks a lot.
Remember, everyone, keep your eyes out for Purnell. One breath, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Do it one breath. You can
super
do it.
Super awesome hyperdimensional mega team.
Woo! There you go. There you go. You kicked that sickness in the ass.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another big thanks to Enrique at Super Awesome Hyperdimensional Mega. I almost did it. Purnell, I almost did it.
Under one breath as requirement.
Super Awesome Hyperdimensional Mega Team. It's a mouthful, but it's an awesome game. Nightwitch, check it out. Purnell is still here. Purnell, thank you for hanging out for that. Chris and Aki are both here. How are you two doing?
Oh, hello.
I'm doing great.
That non-answer. Oh, there. Hello. How are you doing? Hello.
Hello.
I'm doing great. I'm the scared shitless. That's all.
Well, yeah, you did answer though.
I said I'm scared. I'm scared shitless. So yeah, I'm shitless.
What are you? Yes. What are you scared shitless about?
The fact that I might run out of money this month, thanks to all my pre-orders coming in.
No, oh, geez.
Because I'm stupid. Yeah, it's like $500 or so worth of Gunpla.
That's a lot
better now. Shit.
Yes, it is. So much.
You know what you should have done with that money? You should have picked up a Series S to have.
No, yeah. No, no. You're better off with the Gunpla.
I don't know. It would maybe be nice to have the Series S because there is a game that I want that comes out on Thursday that I definitely can't. Blacktail.
Oh, Blacktail, huh?
Yeah. No, it's about Baba Yaga, and okay. It has magic and arrow shooting and stuff, and it just looks really cool to me. But it's for the series only, and all I have here at my grand's house is an X1S, so. It does not come out on last gen, only current, so I can't play it. Well. It makes me sad.
Have you just thought about doing the, not just thought of, like, have you considered just doing the all-access bit?
The who's a what's it?
The all-access. That's what made it, you know, quote-unquote affordable for me, because even though the cost is high, you know, that's stretching the payments out without interest as well. I was like, okay, I can work with this.
Oh, that's the one where you pay for it in, like, a year of Xbox Live and Game Pass.
Yeah.
Yes, 2 years of Game Pass, the system, and it comes to about the cost of the payer, and you pay $35 a month. So on one hand, it's like, man, it sucks that I'm paying $35 for 2 years. By that same token, though, I mean, it's literally the same cost spread out.
Yeah, so there's no financing, there's no interest, it's just the cost.
Yes, I would have just outright bought it while I was out here, but last month I bought about $350 worth of Gunpla, so I kind of
ran sensing a theme here.
You want Gunpla? Yes. Maybe they should make an Xbox Gunpla. You know, you'd be good.
Well, they're not a good.
It's like actually,
there have is Gundam. There is Gundam on Xbox, and I have most of those too.
No, no, no. I'm saying a Gundam, a Gunpla Xbox, as in you built the Xbox. It's like a robot that you can play games on.
Nice. I mean, if someone built a custom case for the Xbox that was a Gundam, I would buy it. I'm just saying, I would buy it. That would be fucking awesome.
$1 billion idea there, Brunel.
Yeah, it's got to get on that. Work, flex my magic here. But all I'm saying is, if you decide to get an Xbox at some point, don't get an S. Just do the other thing. Just take the hit.
Well, the thing is, she has an X at home, so I'm
yeah. I just don't want to carry it on a plane.
The S is better for travel.
Talking about just getting one for a second location. Yeah. That's different.
Yeah, I was planning on getting an S because for here at my grandparents' house, because I'm only here for a few months a year, and I still have, and almost all of my disc games are Xbox One games, and I have a 1S here, so I have something with a disc drive, and I can just play any Xbox Series disc games that I have. I can just play those at fucking home.
No.
So.
That makes more sense then.
Yeah. Yeah, I was hoping I'd have jobs to do while I was out here this year, because usually I do, and I make a handful of money while I'm out here for stuff, and I was going to use that to buy an Xbox, but there's no jobs for me out here right now.
And it's going to stay that way for the next month, because we're going on break for a month.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with her getting a job?
Keeping her busy.
Oh, keeping her busy. Well, play all those games you had to review, but you couldn't beat, because time flies like the goddamn Sparrow.
Actually, while I'm here, I have a tendency to play Ubisoft games, because they're just so fucking unnecessarily large that are. I don't have time to fucking play them at home, because I'm always doing review games. So I tend to play like the Assassin's Creed games, Far Cry games, Watch Dogs games, all that shit. I play them here at my grandparents' house, because during that month, for me, it's a month that I'm off typically. For you guys, it's like 2 or 3 weeks. But during that time, I can usually get one done. Like I started AC Odyssey when I got here. And this has been even while I've been playing review games. And I've already gotten to level like 23 or 28, something like that.
Good Lord.
In it.
Just fine. Yeah.
I think that's further than I made it. And I've been playing Odyssey on and off for like 2 years.
Yeah, I've put 27 hours into it since I got here. And I've been here for, a week and a half?
Did you claim on the guy's dick in the beginning? That giant statue in Odyssey?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. Okay.
Everyone has to do that. There's a giant statue of a naked guy just standing there. And you got to hang from the dick and take a picture, right?
I didn't take a picture, but I did do that, yeah. I didn't mean to. I just climbed from the front, and I just happened. It was there, and I was like, "Oh, that's funny."
Jesus! Did you move the hang dong during your play session?
Well, when you get a big old face full of statue Wang, you kind of remember it. I wasn't expecting that.
You got a face full of Wang. You must hang it.
In fact, Mel's on fire today.
I'm actually currently playing AC Odyssey right now while we're talking, actually. Well, so,
speaking of games that you played there, should we get to reviews?
Sure, we can do this.
You guys ready for reviews?
We could.
Cool. First game tonight, High on Life, developed and published by Squanch Games. Released December 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $59.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. From the mind of Justin Roiland comes High on Life. Humanity is being threatened by alien cartel who wants to use them as drugs. It's up to you to rescue and partner with charismatic talking guns. Take down Garmantuous and his gang and save the world. Or as this game would say, save the fucking world. Aki, you seem like the perfect fucking person to review this game.
Yeah, it's ultra violent, and it says fuck every like fifth word in any sentence that's said. So yes, very much so. You play as some teenage person. They constantly allude to you. One of the characters constantly alludes to you being a boy, but there are girl faces that you can pick because you get to pick your character, basically. Your sister shows you your face in her mirror that has cocaine on it that she's offering you to sport at the very beginning of the game. And you get to flip through different pre-made characters, basically, to choose your face. And there is a wide variety there. And then it's just...
I love that's how they use the mirror. Like in Fallout, or you're in the mirror, the bathroom mirror. This one, a mirror, you're snorting blow off.
Yeah, your character doesn't snort off of it, but she offers you it. And then, immediately after that, you do some, stuff just to get orientated with how to play the game and stuff. And then, bam, aliens appear, warping into your little town and starts going batshit crazy. And there's all sorts of references to other stuff in these games. For instance, when that happens, eventually one of the little things that teleport there teleports away, and it cuts out a chunk of two different houses, and one of them, someone's in the tub. And if you guys have watched Family Guy, you might recognize the skit.
Oh, God.
No.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly what happens.
No.
And it's fantastic.
That's like a random thing to put in the game.
Yeah, it is. It so is. And then you end up with your sister and your house. You guys warp somewhere in space that you guys don't know in order to save yourselves. And it turns out that these aliens, the G3 cartel, has found out that humans are drugs. So, for aliens, anyways. So, that's why they attacked your planet, and it's up to you to stop them. So you go get bounty hunter armor, and you keep the gun that you stole, that is another living species, and you go start killing them. You find some more Galatians, I think, Galatians, something like that is what they're called. The little gun people, you find more of them. Each one's different. Like, your first one shoots globs of snot, basically. And it has both a normal fire, which is just shooting, as well as an alternative fire, which ends up sending a glob, big old round glob that hits and bounces off of things. Every gun is very much like that. But, there are options, accessibility options. Most of them are to shut the fucking characters up if you don't like listening to them.
I mean, who would want to do that?
I don't know. I kept it at the maximum. I was like, no. Anytime they think of talking, I just want them to talk. Just fuck it. Why not?
I want to hear Justin Roiland stammering his lines 24/7.
Is that who plays Morty?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the one who plays 90% of the characters.
Wait, he plays both Rick and Morty?
Yes.
Yeah, they're both inventions of his. Yes. Yeah.
I thought that was two different voice actors.
All of his characters sound like this. They sound like that. They're stammering all the time.
Oh, gee, Chris, I don't know why you would go say something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize they were okay.
That's his thing.
The first gun you find is Morty's voice, just outright. It is Morty.
I mean, yeah, he's played that exact voice in many things.
Yeah, but now I'm questioning if he plays the voices of all the guns. I'm not sure.
He doesn't. They have a bunch of.
There are just some star power in there.
Yeah, there's some massive star power in this game with voice acting. But I'm, you know, that leads to the two main questions. The two big things about this game are the guns and the variety and how fucking weird they are, and the talking and whether or not it would get overplayed. How do the guns handle? Are they all unique? And are they all fun?
I find some of them more fun than others. Basically, there's the standard pistol, which is the first one you get. You get a shotgun, then something that's basically like a needler from Halo. And then my favorite gun, which is something that shoots these little creatures out that goes and starts biting enemies to death. And then you get the last weapon of the game, which is used for the last fight. Yeah, I haven't seen what it even does yet, because I've refused to play the very end of the game. And, you know, they all have, because they're all different guns, they are obviously different, but you've seen them before. Their alternative fires are all different as well, as I already said. The bouncy snot, it can juggle enemies up in the air sometimes. Then there's an alternative that shoots saws out, and the other two are just slight modifications of what they actually do. So they're not super unique. If most of these guns, if you've played first-person shooters, you've seen them. The only one that's really actually unique is the one that shoots at the little critters that bite people. Yes, I know. As for does listening to them run its course quickly?
Do they repeat themselves too quickly? That's a lot of people are concerned that they're just going to, you know, say the same thing 4,000 times.
Well, they talk at random. It's not like, oh, every 20 seconds they say something. It's more like they'll repeat themselves, and you will notice it, and it won't take too long, but they might only say something, you know, at the beginning of each fight. So you might sit there without hearing them for a couple minutes at a time and then hear them say something or a couple things during the fight. And that's it. And the fight might take you like 5 minutes or something to get through all just the sheer amount of enemies that you've managed to spawn in to fuck you up your day. I don't think it gets too tiring. However, near the end of the game, you've heard enough from them. Yeah. And it's kind of like, no. And the thing is, even if you decide to shut the guns the fuck up, they still talk during the main important chunks of the game. So there are scripted things that they talk about. That will still play, even if you turn that to where they don't talk next
at
all.
Well, that makes sense. Like, if they're story, yeah, they have to say that stuff.
Yeah, so you can turn off, you know, if you get tired of hearing them, you can turn them off. I haven't done it just because I don't care that much. Yes, some of the stuff they, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, I've heard this line like 30, 40 times. I don't need to hear it anymore. But every now and then I hear something new and I'm like, I'll keep it on just in case.
Every now and then you get that new little nugget of wisdom that comes flying out of their mouth.
Yeah, or I'll hear something that I actually like hearing them say because it's like, huh, it's kind of funny. The only sad thing is, other than the guns, you also get a knife that's also a Glacian. sadly, that one doesn't talk very often. It pretty much only talks during scripted scenes, which makes me so sad because I love that one because it's a psychotic little motherfucker.
just like you.
Yes, maybe more than me even. Like, it was originally owned by the guy, the alien who set you up with your armor and the bounty board, which is how you're going after the G3 people. He's an old bounty hunter who isn't a bounty hunter anymore. He's a hobo. It was his knife originally. And one of the first things you do when you find it is, it's like, oh yeah, we're here to rescue you. And we were sent here by Gene, which is the name of that alien dude. And the knife's like, oh no, fuck that guy. I want to stab him. And that's all he's like the entire time. Everyone he comes across, he's like, oh no, I don't fucking care. Let me stab him. Stab, 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 stab. And it's great. I just love that character. But he never talks during fights. And I use him a lot during fights because stabbing things in the face is a lot more fun for me.
Understandable. Yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. The game is sitting at $60. A lot of people are worried that it doesn't have the content or it might not have the content. Is there enough there to warrant the price tag?
That really depends on what kind of player you are. If you're just going to go through this as fast as you can, you might want to hold off.
Like, is there replayability?
Sale.
Is there a reason to go back through levels, like replay to collect stuff? Or
yes, there are collectibles. If you're going through and you need to do collectibles, there are a bunch. Every world that you're in has 3 different areas in it, and each area has a certain amount of collectibles. I think like the highest one of them has like 38 in 1/3 of a planet's levels.
Oh,
yeah, and there's
that
like 4
busy.
Different.
Right.
Yeah, there's like 4 different worlds, so there's plenty of places where you need to go collect stuff, which is why I haven't finished the game, because I don't know if I can go back, because there's no manual saving in this game. So I'm like, if I go and I fight that lost the end boss and all this stuff, do I have to replay the entire game again and then go get all these collectibles again? I don't know, so I just haven't done it.
It only sucks when games have that point of no return.
Yeah, and since I don't know if this is a point of no return, I don't want to really continue quite yet. Because it's like, I am close to getting, because there's a set of collectibles. There's the chests that you open, which also are living creatures that you basically kill to open, which are what I was talking about. Like, there's 38 in one level, and so on and so forth. They have a tendency to give you money, which you need to buy upgrades for your guns. Sometimes they have upgrades for your guns in there, and sometimes they have another collectible in them, which is a little card. I am two cards away from having all of the cards. So it's like, and there's 27 cards in total. I'm just like, I really don't want to have to go and find these fucking things again. So I really don't want to, you know, hit a point of no return without knowing about it.
Most games usually warn you. They're like, are you sure you want to do this mission?
I guess that's true.
I would just go for it. Fuck it. The game is $60. Should you go for it?
I think it's personally, yes. I think, especially if you like Rick and Morty, you're probably going to like this. This is even more vulgar than that.
If your IQ is enough.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. If you're just going to just run right through it from beginning to end as quick as you can, I don't think there's enough here for your money. But if you're going to actually, you know, try and get upgrades, find all the collectibles and stuff, I definitely think it's worth full price.
Cool. And if people are on the fence, whether it's length or size or content wise with the game, it is available on Game Pass. You could give it a download, check it out that way. I have been dying for this game to come out, and I am going to play it tonight.
I think you'll enjoy it a lot.
I hope I do. Next game, Samurai Maiden, developed by Shade Inc., published by D3 Publisher, released December 8th on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. A young woman from the 21st century with sharp swordsmanship skills finds herself in Haneji during the Sengoku period. Together with a trio of newfound ninja friends, she races through the underworld beneath Haneji, confronted by enraged corpses at every turn. Our friend Brooke covered this one. Unfortunately, she's not able to join us because she has like an actual job now that requires way more attention than we deserve. So she's got to do that.
Pretty sure she's literally just out there partying in Los Angeles, but yeah.
I'm trying to make it sound.
But yeah. Trying to make it sound serious.
Serious doesn't work for us. Give that up.
Yeah, I know. So she wrote in a review, and Chris, you're going to read it.
Chris making his reading on the air debut.
she said she wanted you to do it, so.
Well, yeah. I will try and do it as much justice as possible.
Okay, before you do that, I'm going to have to say, hey, Brooke, now you have to answer.
Hey, Aki.
There we go. All right.
I can actually kind of do an impression of her, but I'm not going to, so because that would be me.
You should.
I'm just going to say things in my voice and with that, with her kind of timing. Okay, so. I gotta pull the thing up here. Okay. Samurai Maiden review. Now, this is, I'm gonna, like I do when I read stuff, if the, something's in parentheses or whatever, I'm probably going to mention the parentheses and stuff like that. So, you know, just know that, I am reading this word for word, but I'm also adding things sometimes. Okay. Disclaimer. This review was written by an Activision employee named Brooke, but she'd like us to note that this review is in no way expresses the thoughts and opinions of her employer, and instead is just like totally her opinion, man. Disclaimer over review Sarto. That is in all caps.
She's going to have to say that every review now, isn't she?
Y'all are going to have to hold her to it, yeah. Tired of being ... Maidenless? Welp, I was prepared to come in here and give this game a pretty good review. I said this out loud while playing it, and my boyfriend said, oh, interesting, because this game has a ton of bad reviews. I was like, really? Why? This game is great. Turns out, a lot of these bad reviews are because of one reason. This English release of this game has significantly less panty shot material in it than the Japanese one. I do feel this is... Yeah, I know. Broke my heart when I read it the first time. I do feel this is founded criticism for games that are sexy first, all caps. But I don't feel that's necessarily this game, so I'm not digging that criticism this time. In this essay, I will... Just kidding, Joe, sorry, all caps. So what is Samurai Maiden? That's my way of reading bold. Samurai Maiden is your story. You're an average self-proclaimed Gen Z girl wearing a schoolgirl uniform, a black choker, and some sexy lingerie stockings. You have a totally normal life, until one day you hear an angelic voice calling you the Priestess of Harmony? And then you wake up in the Japan's Sengoku era, right next to none other than Nobunaga Oda. And he needs your help. He needs you to fight. If you aren't... Oh, hang on.
It's your help. He needs you to fight.
My cat was going nuts trying to get out of here.
He needs
as soon as I started reading, he ran for the door.
Get me out of this room.
Reading, fuck this, I'm out.
Fortunately,
Nobunaga, no thank you.
Fortunately, Joe is a judicious editor, and this will all be cut before the final episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay, so if you aren't mildly familiar with the Sengoku era and games that put you in it and make Nobunaga Oda a character you can interact with, you haven't been playing a lot of Japanese games. I was going to add Buster to that, and that's not written on the page. This is the premise of about 90% of Japanese games, parentheses, pause for Aki to get angry and correct this, end parentheses, dot, dot, dot. Okay, okay, but almost. Sorry, I meant to pause there.
Oh, good.
All good. What kind of game is Samurai Maidens? This is a third-person 3D battle and story game where you're gonna hack, slash, and hack some more while experiencing a story with characters in your party and raising your affection with them to unlock even more story. You can increase your affection with them by winning battles and taking care of them as party members, but also getting to know them and eventually kissing on them. But a note, this isn't a game that pretends to be something other than porn and then turns into porn. It's just an incredibly fanservice-y and sexually charged story about your love for your fellow samurai maidens. I'm estimating about half of the content of this game are story-driven scenes starring you and your team. These characters are illustrated using some pretty incredible-looking 3D models. Pause for Aki to look up the girls in this game and agree with me about how cute they are. Pause.
I should point out, quick, while Aki's looking up this game to find out whether the girls are attractive or not, it is...
You're doing it right now.
It is T-rated, so it's not like it is a porn game.
We should make your pushback is noted.
Okay, yeah, they're all adorable. Yes, I like this already. Yes.
Unpause, next sentence, all caps. They're so beautiful and cute. All right.
True.
They're so well designed, move great, great Japanese voice acting too. They're probably my favorite 3D models I've interacted with. This game had a big budget, that's seven eyes for big, especially compared to other D3 publisher games with a sexy vibe. And I would know, I've played like 100 of their games, that's why I took this one. The game is self-aware, it knows what kind of game it is, and it makes fun of itself often, and it's very funny, caps. There's an in-game camera you can use to take selfies with your battle team after you beat a boss or whatever. Chapter 1 of this game is titled, But I'm Just a Girl. By the way, I did hear that the constant reference to the player character being a Gen Z girl was a last-minute change from High School Girl that D3 publisher made to make all the sexualization of the teenage girls in this game less damning to an American audience. But, and this is italics here, D3 publisher... Now that you've ambiguously made us Americans into a Gen Z girl so that we could feasibly not be a minor, we're just upset at you for not letting us look at our own underwear more. Something to think about. Anyway, Samurai Maidens has got a kind of persona thing going on as far as the split of narrative scenes versus battle scenes, which are both using their 3D models in different ways. The combat is not turn-based, but... You have similar stuff going on as far as raising affection between characters and building a limited amount of weapons and equipment for your party you can upgrade in between chapters at a base camp type area. It's also got kind of a Persona thing going on in that it's a long game, caps. I played for a few hours when I was starting it, checked the game content progress bar, and noticed I was at 0%, so that's always nice.
Oh, geez.
Before I get into my rating here, I will go ahead and address the panty shot thing. You can still see panties in this game. You just can't take pictures of the panties with the in-game camera. Well,
how
you can
dare they?
I know. Well, you can take the pictures, but the panties will be censored later in the pictures that are saved. I basically have nothing to say about this part of the game because I just don't care about it, or the people who are mad about it. Go watch hentai or play Nekopara. This is the beautiful story of my weird relationships with my hot teenage samurai friends.
Oh, I love it.
I do both of those things. I'd like to just point out.
Well, that's fine. Again, your pushback is noted. Rating.
Thank you.
I give this game a buy it, as long as you have at least a little tolerance for anime girls being sexualized and having bouncy boobs and blushing a lot, and you want to play an action-y combat adventure game that is super easy to learn and play through, but pleasingly difficult enough to master, and has several difficulty settings available as well if you want a bigger challenge. As always, I recommend you watch a little gameplay before buying because this is a more expensive title, but once you know what you're getting, I highly doubt this title's going to disappoint you. It's got some long loading screens, and sometimes characters block the view of the... can? What? Hang on. I think she's saying, it's got some long loading screens, and sometimes characters block the view of the camera, and it's a little bit clunky until you adjust the camera. But overall, this game is incredibly well designed and made. Some people would find this to be a deny it because it's not sexy enough, but I find it to be a buy it because I think it's just sexy enough. I not only find it accessible playstyle-wise and learning the game, but I also find it super accessible content-wise to an array of different players. I don't even find this game too mature for most teenagers to play, to be honest. She wrote that as TBH, but I went ahead and expanded it. As long as those teenagers have seen some anime before, so I think it offers this sort of experience to a wide age range as well. Do you want to play a fighty game about saving the world or whatever, with girls kissing on sexy girls, but you don't actually want it to turn into something super porny or downright naughty? Do you want to just, like, hang out in that vibe for a long time while you basically hack and slash your way through a fan servicey but lighthearted and action-packed anime? Did you enjoy animes like Food Wars and Classroom of the Elite? Then this may very well be the game for you. I know it was a good game for me, and if I'd paid about $40 out of my own money for this, I wouldn't have regretted it and felt that the amount of content offered was well worth that price. Alright, review over. Love y'all. Love you too, Brooke.
All I know is the fucking trailer song for this game fucking slaps. Oh my god, it's amazing.
It really does. That's like most anime stuff. They got the good music.
I wonder if this is on Xbox or not.
It is not.
Womp womp.
It is on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC. So it's on everything but Xbox.
Okay, I'll add this to my list on Steam.
Wonder if the load times are improved if you play it on PS5. I would have to think that having SSD would improve load times on there, but who knows if it's an issue with development that leads to the load times. I don't even think Fast Drive will fix anything, but
yeah, I wonder.
Who knows?
Anyway, next game is Bot Gaiden, developed by Sword Swipe Studios and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released December 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. Take control of ninja bots Robu and Bytron as they seek to recover the golden skulls from Giorgio and his band of hench bots. Purnell, what is going on in Bot Gaiden?
This is going to be a short review, but don't let that deter you from what it actually means at the end. Bot Gaiden is a game that can best be described as someone taking their love of speedrunning, putting it into a blender with Mega Man X and Ninja Gaiden, and releasing a game based off of it. That is a very good thing, by the way. The idea behind this is that you play as a robot. If you have a friend, I don't, you could play as two robots, in which case, the way the game progresses, you'll take one of those robots, and you will proceed to one of a multitude of stages, like Mega Man, where you can kind of select the stage, and each one is run by a particular boss, which who you need to take down. However, unlike Mega Man, where usually the boss gives you a weapon based off of said boss, in this game, you get augmentations that better enhance your character. But those augmentations are determined based on how fast you get through the level and defeat them. The longer you take to get to the level, the weaker the upgrade you get when you beat the boss. So they kind of incentivize you to get through the level quickly. Now I'm going to describe the overall vibe of the flow of gameplay and then what getting through the level means aside from the actual item you earn. So when you start a stage, you are progressing through it. And it's funny because each of the levels typically has some kind of cool like reference to it, like might be the waterfall level from Contra or like the cliff level, one of the cliff levels from Ninja Gaiden, and just other just cool vibes that come off of them. But you'll run through the stage. You have a few basic moves. You can attack. You can jump. You kind of have a hang glider, which allows you to kind of glide across, like, you know, air surface. You don't have to pick up an item or anything to do that. You can do a dodge maneuver where you kind of stand in place and evade, but if you do it for too long, you self-destruct, so you can't exploit it. And at the surface, that's kind of... Oh, also, you can wall climb and do that thing like a Ninja Guy where you bounce from wall to wall. And aside from that, at the default, that's what you got. However, power-ups exist within the levels, and each time you get one new ability. And they kind of get earned in an order. So if you have no power-ups, typically the first power-up you'll get is the jump jet, which allows you to double jump. Then you'll eventually get a shuriken that kind of functions like the windmill throwing star in Ninja Gaiden. You'll get a dashing slash, which allows you to dash into enemies and do damage. And then, if you still haven't been hit yet, and you find another power-up, you'll get hyperspeed, which is a short burst of speed to allow you to kind of fly through the level. And if you take a hit, you'll scale back one on this power-up tree or chain. The longer you take to get through the level, aside from the thing I mentioned before about the power-up that you win, the boss also ends up with more health. So don't dawdle. Don't take your time. They incentivize you to push through stages. And you're going to die a lot because just like in Ninja Gaiden, the bird that fucks me every time is still present, but now he's a robot. And you will find yourself more often than not getting hit by things you did not expect to see because you're flying through the stage and then the enemies are showing up. And I do not take that to be a detriment to the game. That's by design. Because if you've ever played Ninja Gaiden, the game did the exact same friggin' thing. And they pretty much incentivize you to learn level layouts, learn enemy placement, and optimize your run to suit that need.
There's some smartass in chat saying shuriken and not shuriken.
I don't care. Guess what? Shuriken. There it is. That's what I'm calling it now. It's a shuriken. Shuriken. Shuriken.
By the way, that's
oh, my soul hurts. That my soul hurts so much.
You're using that shuriken.
Shuriken.
Also, oh, I've heard people pronounce it shuriken too or whatever, but I'm just being stupid. So shuriken. Once you beat the stage, you get the power up that you earned based on the time it took you to beat the stage. If you feel as though you want to go back and do better, though, you can always go back to the stage. In some respects, it's probably incentivized for you to go through some other levels and get some lower tier upgrades, and then by then you might feel a little more confident about going back to older stages with a, you know, a finer kit and trying it again. Now, most of the upgrades you get are typically enhancements to the things you've already got. So, for example, one level will allow you to use a triple jump when you get the jump jet instead of just a double jump. Another level will might allow you to freeze time when you pick up the hyperspeed power-up. Things like that. Personally, I kind of feel like they're nice enhancements to get because they all of them do more to enhance your ability to run through stages quickly, which is, again, what the game is pretty much built on. Graphically, the game is very colorful and engaging. Musically, oh well, it's rocking.
Man, that's all you're going to say about the graphics? I love the visuals in this. It's got really cool, like hand-drawn animated style to it. I like it.
Yeah, I agree. I do too. I think they're great. And it's very well suited for the game too. The only thing I wish it had more of is I wish that the enemy variety was a little greater. There are unique enemies across the stages, but they also sort of reuse enemies too, but give them different palette swaps. Again, Ninja Gaiden did it. We love Ninja Gaiden. So also the guy in the chat, if it makes you feel any better, I didn't say Ninja Gaiden. I could have done that, but nah. I got that one right. Ninja Gaiden.
Did you miss where I said the person in chat was Aki?
Oh, God, that makes me feel better now. Shrucken.
Oh, fuck you, Pernell.
Throw more shrucking.
Shrucking.
This game is a title that I feel a lot of retro gamers will truly appreciate if they're willing to give it a chance. I can say firsthand that aside from just seeing it pop up in like the list of to come games, which as we all know is just a sea at this point, I knew heard nothing about it. This game will fly under a lot of radars, and I don't think that needs to be the case. This is a fantastic product. And if you're a speedrunner, this is a no-brainer, really. But even if you're not a speedrunner and you just kind of miss that style of gameplay, you would be it would behoove you to give this a go, because they did a good job putting this game together, and I think the price tag suits it, too.
Nice. Well, it's $15, your official verdict.
Easily a buy. This game is great.
Cool. Yeah, it's from East Asia Soft, which sometimes has more like budget-oriented titles, so it's cool to see them have something that really stands out and hopefully gain some traction, because it looks visually, like I said, it's great looking. Yeah.
And let's be honest here, the world needs to get more exposure to shrucking. I think that as a society, we don't talk about those nearly enough.
Aren't you just saying to go shruck yourself?
Yeah. And how? Oh my God. I love it. I was like, Aki's got friends in the shrucking community.
Aki's like ready to quit the show, which is perfect timing because next game to talk about is Wavetale, developed by Thunderful Development, published by Thunderful, released December 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Surf the waters of a submerged city, unravel the past, save the islanders from mysterious sea monsters, and discover the secrets hidden under the surface. Aki, what is going on in Wavetale?
Okay, and this, apparently the world has kind of been doomed. The whole world's flooded over, and now there's this black mist that creates monsters in it, or something. And you and your grandma live at a lighthouse, which helps push back the fog, as they call it. And it doesn't work for some reason one day, and you end up being able to fight the mist monsters off, as well as find a cool little friend for yourself. This friend is a shadow version of seemingly your character, and the shadow is stuck in the water, which gives you the ability to run on the water as though it were land, instead of having to rely on boat, because again most of the world is underwater now. This becomes your quest to help free the people of the mist and to stop the mist and the bad guys that everyone thinks is responsible there for all this. Most of this game is a puzzle and a walking sim, more or less. It's very much like Submerged. If anyone's played that, it's very much like that. Which I think is great, because I really like that game. Both those games, technically. There's two of them. There's
something they did that stood out was they didn't have combat. What's the combat like in this game?
It's pretty basic. There's not a ton of it. There are big bosses, which are just puzzles for the most part, until you get to the final boss, then it's actually some actual fighting on top of puzzles. But for most of the basic enemies, you have a light and I think maybe a heavy attack. I only ever used one attack, so... and the creatures just come at you, and you just whack them, and as long as you keep hitting them, they're stun locked, so they can't hit you. So it doesn't really matter how big or strong they are. Just keep hitting them. Just keep a combo going. You'll be fine. And sometimes they attack in like groups of like three or four, but it's usually like really small ones and a big one, and the small ones die in like one or two hits. So it's not really particularly hard, and it's basically just hack and slashing them at that point. There's no real worry about the combat. You're not likely going to die. And if you find the combat too difficult for some reason, you can just make yourself invulnerable in the accessibilities options.
Nice.
So, yeah. So that's what I did at the very beginning of the game. So,
does that affect achievements at all?
Nope. Good. You can use any of the accessibility options. I don't remember all of them anymore because it's been a while since I've played it. But yeah, nice. you can turn any of them on or off that you want, and it won't affect any of the achievements. Go have fun.
Yeah, that's something that Pernell, we were talking to Enrique about, having the that game they label them as cheats, but having the ability to make games easier and progress without losing your mind is always a benefit.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, you know, if, being able to get difficult achievements isn't a particularly important thing. I mean, that's if you're like, oh yeah, I beat all of Dark Souls, I'm so proud of myself, no one else on the planet gives a fuck. So why not have the ability for other people like me to be able to just run through it, get all the achievements much easier, and be able to talk about the game? There's no reason to make any of this stuff prevent achievements, in my opinion. Just because I think it's stupid.
How is this one with the accessibility? This is another game that just visually looks stunning.
Oh, this game is so beautiful. I really like the designs of everything in the game. Most of the monsters, and there's a few different types of monsters, but the most basic one is this like head crab kind of thing, except for instead of the head crab body, it looks like it's an actual like beastie head, like a big glob head, and it's they're funny looking. And then you get more humanoid-ish looking enemies, and then you get like big giant bulls that have like metal parts attached to them and stuff, and their heads end up looking kind of like TVs to me. And they're just really interesting. On top of all the characters being all sorts of shapes and sizes and colorations, it's really interesting looking. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, it is $29.99. What are your thoughts?
I am totally for this. I think that's perfectly fine for this.
Cool. Sounds good. Next game, Chained Echoes, developed by Matthias Linda, published by Deck 13. Released December 8th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. If you were not a fan of High on Life, this might tickle your fancy instead, because it is also a part of Xbox Game Pass. Pick up your sword, channel your magic, or board your mech. Chained Echoes is a 16-bit style RPG set in a fantasy world where dragons are as common as piloted mechanical suits. Chris, what is going on in Chained Echoes?
Okay, so Chained Echoes. I'm really glad this is my only game this week, because I've been playing the hell out of it. So I started on the Steam version, which is the one I was provided with for review. And then the first day it was available, which is like a couple days after I got the Steam version, I bought the Switch version and started playing that. And then
wait, seriously?
Yeah.
For full price?
Yeah.
Well, and then I'm going to do it, damn it.
I passed where I got to on the Steam version, and then went on further than that. So I'd say I probably put about like 10 hours, 12 hours into this one now so far. But a lot of it was kind of going over parts I'd already gone over. So anyways, I just thought I'd say, I'm really going to take my time with this one. Okay, so every once in a while, and for some publishers, you know, once a month, a game comes out that is, you know, designed from the ground up to kind of remind you of the stuff that you loved back in the 90s, like, you know, your Chrono Trigger style stuff, your Final Fantasy style stuff, using, you know, usually real obviously tile based kind of sprites and backgrounds and things like that. I'm not going to call out any particular publishers, but let's just say there, a person would not, I would not blame anybody for looking at a game like Chained Echoes and with a little bit of trepidation of like, oh, another throwback RPG. Well, I've been burned before by, you know, by all these games that start with the letter A. Huh?
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say. Okay, so what I want to encourage you to do is please forget about all of those other 16, 32, 8-bit style RPGs that have come out in the last 20 years and get yourself frickin' psyched for what I consider the greatest throwback RPG that is actually, I would rank this up there with a Final Fantasy VI with a Chrono Trigger. This is a masterpiece. Wow. We're letting that out a little early here, but let me explain. Because
why do you say this too? Because like, just to get some general context, like, there's one game I would like you to play later on too that came out earlier this year that I reviewed on this show.
Yeah,
that also scratched that itch called Rise of the Third Power. Because I would like to hear your take on it. Not saying for the review, obviously, because you can't play it right now. But
oh,
I would like to hear that cross pollination between the reviews and see what your take is. But I am going to look into this game, but now please talk about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. By the way, Joe, I'm posting something on Twitter from my Switch. It just says Nintendo Switch on it, but be prepared to like actually look at this or link it or whatever. Okay. I'm just going to take a minute. It's a video. It's going to come up in the review, but anyways, I'm posting one. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but it's so delightful that it's great. Okay, so Chained Echoes starts with a fake out. It starts off with a fake out of the hero supposedly named Glenn with two N's, that there's a callback for you, waking up in his bedroom, his upstairs bedroom, with his mother pulling the curtains and being like, wake up, it's time to get up. And then you're like, oh, I'm waking up in an idyllic, you know, RPG town, and my mother is drawing the curtains. I know what's happening here. And then you get up and you're like complaining about being tired and stuff, and then your mom approaches you and she's like, I said, get your ass up, we're almost to the border. And he's like, excuse me? And then she punches him, and then there's the title. Then you wake up.
Okay, I like this already.
Yeah. And then you wake up and it's that you are actually a mercenary on a ship, and one of your coworkers has just rudely woken you up because you're about to cross the border into a war. You're in a war right now. And so you play through this sequence of this guy. You get to learn how to fight in these superpowered mechs that are going to come up a bit later in the game. You go through the tutorial. It's a very organic, nice tutorial. And then a thing happens involving this kind of MacGuffin that is the goal of this military exercise, which is, it's not just random. It's very well explained to you, but in not too much detail. And so your guy does the thing that he's told to do, accidentally triggers an event that costs the lives of tens of thousands in the kingdom that is being warred against. He somehow survives, his best friend survives, and we don't know if anybody else survived. We know lots and lots of people died, and it's a year later now, and now we are controlling two completely different characters. So the background of this game is that there's three countries at war, right? And they've been at war for 150 years, so people have been born, grown old, and died in this war. And the princess of the kingdom up north is in the kingdom down south working for the royal guard, and we don't even know why. She's got her very noble minded basically simp of a bozeman at her side, and you play as those two characters for a while, and you get to learn about their motivations. You learn about the political situation. It plays out a little bit like a Final Fantasy Tactics in this way, like characters, you know, actually engaging in like politics and like talking with people and stuff like that. Also, the sprites, you'll notice right away, are animated beautifully. And this is the kind of game where, you know, sometime in this scene, this is the kind of game where the sprites are actually like really well animated, and they have special animations for things. So, like, you can watch a character, instead of doing the thing where, you know, a character sprite runs into another character sprite, the screen shakes, and that's supposed to indicate, oh, this character must have hit this character. No. In this game, you can watch a character, like, stab somebody to death, blood and everything, with their actual sword that they pull out of a sheath with their hand, and then the other sprite, to admonish them, comes up, grabs them, raises their hand, smacks that other character across the face, and you'll never see this animation again. Like, this is, like, Mother 3 level of unique animations for certain events, for certain characters. There is so much care put into this game. It's just incredible. And, you know, once you're done playing through that, you uncover something else that's dire, then it flashes to another character. And that character is now playing through basically the southern capital, you know, because there's a temporary peace that was actually caused by the explosion caused by your other character. And so now there's like a celebration, and you get to play as a different character who's also kind of mysterious and intriguing. He's possibly a very old wizard who knows more than he lets on about this whole event, but he's basically kind of a happy-go-lucky bard aristocrat author guy. Anyways, you get to play mini games with him, and that section of the game is so fun, and it sets you up to think that you're going in one direction, and then it just goes into a totally different direction, and you're controlling a different character. Anyway, what I'm saying is, you'll play about 3 hours of this game before your characters actually meet each other. You are playing through their development, and you get to learn their motivation through the storytelling of getting to play through their stories themselves. And the last game to, like, really do this well was Final Fantasy VI. And that is, like, the level we're talking about with this game. There is so much writing and, like, drama and humor. And like I said, you get to learn your characters by living them, and then they all come together. And now you've got to learn the a battle system that is a little bit like Final Fantasy X. So the fighting system in this game is turn-based. You choose you want to fight, do spells, skills, and stuff like that. And there's a twist there, too. Don't let me forget that. But it actually has to where you got four characters on screen at once, but any one of those characters can be paired with any of the other characters that aren't in your party, and you can freely switch between them once per turn. And not only will that give you a whole different setup to work with, and also give you, like, needed backup if your character gets injured, unless they fall over, you know, if they lose all their life and fall, then you can't switch them until they're healed up again. But anyways, there's lots of opportunity to, like, switch characters. It also helps you in a system that is basically called the overdrive system. So when you attack, you know, use your special skills, use an item, whatever, it raises a gauge that goes from a yellow regular line, where your characters are just normal, to a green overdrive bar. And that overdrive bar is great to be in. You want to stay in there because it doubles, it basically, like, raises your character's, like, damage, but halves the amount of skill points it takes to use a skill. And so, but if you cross over and get into overheated, so you've overdriven too much, then your characters will take double damage, and their skills are less effective. They're basically burnt out. And so there's certain skills that can lower the gauge, as well as skills that'll raise the gauge, and it kind of changes dynamically throughout the battle. And these battles, if you've got it on normal difficulty, they can be very long, but in a good way. Like, strategy just, like, abounds in this game. Every character has different sets of stuff they can do. You can also customize your character with freaking items that you have to fight special battles for and use up special items for. And those can be equipped to give your characters, like, essentially a pseudo job system. So it's got a job system tucked in there, too. Just, like, going through the gameplay is just ludicrous. Like, there's so much, and yet it's kind of simple and, like, well presented. Man, I'm not even going to get to the treasure system, am I? So anyways.
So, what's the treasure system?
Okay, so here's the thing, is that the game, like, basically, so the way that your characters get stronger is not through experience points, right? It's actually got the Chrono Cross system, which is odd. You get what's called Grimoire Shards, but they're just gold stars, come on. For defeating a boss, or you can actually get extra ones by doing specific, like, goal-oriented things. You know, you get to join an adventurer's guild, you get to, like, they're really, really good things to win, because you can then use them to spend on characters like skill development, learning new skills, not in a sphere grid or anything, but it's a little bit like that, because you have to unlock a certain amount of skills on the first tier to start accessing the second tier. And you get to be real strategic with it, because when you get those skills, you can then use a different skills point system, which is that you gain from just regular battles, to raise those skills levels where they're more powerful or more effective or whatever. And, you know, that includes passive skills and also just plain stat boosts. You get all of that, but no, like, standard levels or experience points. So the way that you gather up these things that'll give you the advantage for what level you're in, is to do things like, basically there's, like, goals that in a special menu, there's goals that are linked together on a grid. And if you can do one goal, let's say it's defeat three slimes, whatever, and then you do that, and then, like, next to it, there's another goal that's, like, defeat this special enemy, and then you do them both, well, now you've got a combo of two squares that you've unlocked. Now, each square has its own rewards, which includes these points, but if you link them together, then the more that you link together without breaking the connection, the more, like, you can actually get, like, more levels out of your characters. Like, you can get these grimoire shards, you can also get the what's called the sacred water that lets you do a if you can find these special statues to use the sacred water on, then you can get some of those skill not skill but those job like amulets that I was mentioning. So you can, like, actually unlock whole new jobs through judiciously filling out this grid. But here's the thing, you don't have to do that stuff, it's just there for you. Yeah, like I said, this game, it's got system upon system that all kind of reminds you of stuff from the 90s, early aughts, like the stuff that was done right, but they very deftly avoided what made any of those systems, like, long, drawn out, or boring. There's no grinding in this game, there's not even random encounters. You see every enemy on the map, and if you're in an area where you've defeated an enemy, they don't come back until you completely, like, leave the area and come back. So it's like, you can fight as little or as much in this game as you want, and you can, like, again, you can set the difficulty where you can, you know, basically kneecap the enemies in the stats if you just want to run through this story without having to worry too much about, you know, doing things. You can also jack it way up and, you know, really get your Etrian Odyssey on. But so all that,
I'm guessing you enjoyed this one a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But I'm not done. So there's a couple of things I really have to sell this thing on. One, the aesthetics. Again, I've said this game is beautiful. It is gorgeous. The backgrounds that you'll see in some of these towns, like, you'll kind of run along an upper edge and get a view of, like, the town, and you're gonna be like stopping and moving the camera, like, you have a little bit of camera movement you can do, and you're gonna be, like, looking at backgrounds and staring, because they're so nice. There's scenes that you only see one time in the game, and they're just so good, and it's just like you just get lost in them. The music is incredible. It's catchy and, like, actually excellent. I would say it's maybe not to Chrono Cross level, but it's getting up there. There's some very Mitsuda-ish, like, stuff going on here. It's great tunes, and I have yet to run into the same town theme twice. So, although there is, like, in the larger overworld area that I'm in right now, there's the same music, it actually will change in some places. So it looks like it has a very beefy soundtrack that I'm really looking forward to hearing the rest of. And then the game, like I said, it has emotional moments. It has real character interaction, like characters kind of, because they're also diverse in, like, their backgrounds and stuff. Like, they actually do react to each other, like, you know, kind of realistically, which is great. But what I'm going to point out now is that the game's also funny as hell when it wants to be. I'm going to post this in the Twitch chat right now. I just uploaded it to Twitter. So there is a there's a scene in the game. So when you're playing as the he's supposed to be a very old guy, but he looks young. That's part of his mystery. He's like 500 years old and looks like he's younger than me. But one of the mini games that you can play is a turtle race, right? And so you talk to your turtles and they'll say turtle back to you. But if one of them says like turtle with like two exclamation points, you know, that's the one to bet on. Anyway, so you bet some of your points on this turtle and see which one wins, and you get to watch a turtle race. And while the game is doing the turtle race, the music changes from like idyllic medieval, like, you know, accordion orchestra, like type of jaunty music. It has a straight up death metal song with vocals just for the turtle race.
Can I play this and right now?
I wish you would.
Okay.
I'm good.
Right, silence I'm for the next 30 seconds. Wow.
Right?
Holy shit, that was fucking amazing.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And with that, I rest my case.
For a fucking turtle race, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Well, I know the answer, but $25, what's your verdict on this one?
Yes, obviously buy it. This is like, seriously, I am predicting this game is going to be huge when enough word gets out about it. Like, this is going to be the game. And for me, this is going to be the new thing against which all other, like, RPGs that are, you know, pixel art and whatnot have to, like, compare themselves to. Because this is an independent game. I cannot believe that. I can't believe it's $25. I'm going to pay $50 for a physical version on this the day it's announced. And that's on Switch, where I've already bought it. So, like,
tell, this might be a solo developer.
the developer's name.
Steam is just Matthias Linda.
And I know the composer is somebody different. I think I saw a credit for that somewhere. And I don't know how many people worked on this game, but the work got done. There is not a shred of laziness to this game. That's the thing. This game is, again, it is a masterpiece. Every bit of this game is so worked on. Like, they did not, like, apart from, like, again, you know, like, one part of a field might look like another part of a field, but the game does not feel like it's in any way like a copy-paste job of anything else. And it, like I said, it pulls from so many excellent places and does it well and does it right, and it is its own thing. And I am not going to stop playing this game until I beat it, for God's sakes. I'm going to be definitely playing this until I beat it throughout this vacation. So,
well, it's a good thing we're going on break, huh?
Yeah, this has my highest recommendation, and in fact, I'm still considering whether this has beaten Live Alive as my game of 2022. So,
well, we'll find out next episode.
Yeah,
when we talk about our game of the year discussion, fun shit like that. But one final game to talk about tonight is called She Wants Me Dead, developed by Hello There Games, published by Red Deer Games, released December 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $9.99. Lula is just an average cat who happens to be a master engineer. Her traps are intricate and require your full focus. Expect no mercy and lots of surprises. Sink into the world of She Wants Me Dead thanks to the incredible soundtrack. The rhythm is the key to Max's survival. If you let it lead you, he might see the light of day. This 2D platformer rhythm game will not make it easy on you. Pernell, what is going on in She Wants Me Dead?
I missed something because I didn't pick up on the rhythm platformer part throughout the gameplay that I had. But what it did have was some pretty brutal platforming sections. Essentially, the downside to this game is that it only has about 9 or so stages. However, those 9 stages can be pretty tough. You're going to die a lot getting through them. So if you're the type of person that likes the whole concept of the massacre platformer, but want a very small dose of one, you might be okay with coming to this game. Your main character is tasked with running through a cityscape that is booby-trapped latent because your pet cat decided to somehow create them and line them throughout the neighborhood. I don't ask questions. I just try to survive. And as you play through the game, there's a song that's playing. It's actually a fully recorded like audio track. Probably even had a studio release for all I can tell, that plays over the level when you're playing through it. But each time you die, the music will kind of shift and ebb a little bit, so it gets a little different. So I guess it's meant to kind of keep the audio pacing from becoming too drowned out and just droll, especially because, again, you're going to die a lot. Your maneuverability doesn't consist of much, though. You can run, you can jump, and if you hold down the jump button when you land on a platform, you'll kind of immediately bounce back up. So you have to do that thing particularly where you have to like kind of time your jumps. You can just hold it down and go boop, boop. Though, instinctively, I still kind of wanted to time my jumps because it just feels natural, you know? Obstacles can range from any number of things. Swinging axes, landmines, spike levels, flames, disappearing platforms. There's a lot of ridiculous crap that's trying to kill you in this game. And, again, your goal is to get from the beginning of the level to the end of the level before time runs out. You start with 5 lives. Every time you get to a checkpoint on a stage, they reward you with 2 more lives. If you run out of lives, you just have to start the level over again, pretty much. The lives are pretty much solely there for the purpose of letting you start from checkpoints. If you manage to beat a level without I'm not sure. I still haven't figured out particularly if it's without dying or within a certain time limit. I just kind of came to assume it was without dying because that's what I was shooting for. You'd unlock a gold frame. And the gold frame is a really stupid picture of your cats. Like a cat wearing like a really dopey t-shirt, or the cat had set up at a tea party and the cat doesn't like these pictures. So it's like that's the reward is the embarrassment of your cat by succeeding on a level without dying. However, as you beat levels in general, also possibly related to beating them without dying, you unlock wardrobe elements, which can be used to customize the look of your character. You have to purchase these things with in-game money, though. Money of which you earn by beating stages, and also, for some reason, when you die, I've seen the cat just pay me money. I don't know why he does that. I guess he figures he'll loot my corpse in the end, so nuts to that. But you'll use the money to buy things like a boxing glove or a tutu, or you can make yourself Mr. Invisible because you're a freaking masochist. Harder masochist or whatever. But for the most part, the game is a consistent element of running through 9 stages, dodging traps and platforms to dodge them. The levels can be pretty short sometimes, too. Just you'll die a lot getting to the end of them. So it's hard to hard to say how I feel about this, because as a game itself, I mean, it's a pretty stable massacre platform where you're going to die a lot. You're going to feel good when you succeed, and there's a good music track playing underneath it as you do all these things. However, there are only 9 levels. At one point, I thought it was actually 9 levels that reset every day, like some sort of daily challenge. But after booting it up on 2 separate days and seeing that the levels were the same, I kind of came to accept that I think it's just 9 stages. So depends on how you feel about that kind of thing. If you feel like you need that bang for your buck, this may not be up your alley. But it's at least a try if you find yourself to fancy massacre platformers. And maybe you might want to have a new earworm flowing through your ear after you experience this one.
Well, here's a question for you. Normally it's $10, and that's a try it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a try it regardless, because massacre is massacre. I mean, it doesn't have that sort of, like, for me to make it go from a try it to a buy it, it would have to be one of those massacre platforms that kind of adds additional elements, like that Super Mambo quest where you can change colors, which affects how you do things, or, you know, something that goes a little beyond. But it's still a try it.
What if it's $1.99?
That would make it a fuck it, why not?
Because that's how much it is on the Switch right now. I don't know why we see these games launch at like $2 on the Switch, but it's still like full price or near full price on Xbox and PlayStation.
Now, before you say it, are you sure this isn't one of those games where they're giving you a discount because you own another game in their catalog?
Not that I could tell.
Okay.
Because I'm looking at it in an incognito window.
Okay. The only reason I can think of why those companies do that kind of thing is either one, for that reason, or two, they generally might make the sale go short so they can kick a bunch of sales up, and then when they go away, if someone goes to the best-selling games on the site page, their game will appear on there.
Yeah.
But either way,
$2, is it worth it on the Switch?
Why not? For $2, why not? Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it for $2 for sure.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through.
We did. Precious antique. Did. And no shrunken were lost in the process.
I could hear Aki cheering constantly.
Totally.
Oh, there she is. I didn't know if she was going to say anything else the rest of this show. Big thanks to the three of you for hanging out and keeping me company. Brunel, thanks for being here the whole episode. Big thanks to Enrique, at super awesome hyperdimensional mega team, for coming on and chatting about the Night Witch with us. And
you become a pro.
Haha. You do it, Purnell.
Never. I can keep the modesty where it is. I judged. I do not compete.
Big thanks to Team 17 as well for hanging out on that interview and keeping our asses in check. They were there for you, Purnell. I didn't know how crazy you would get, so needed a chaperone. Music this episode, we are going to play some more SML Christmas themed holiday goodness. I don't know which one. How about the one ups? We'll just stick with the one ups.
There you go.
Oh my overlap. God. The one ups. At this point, you got to have at least like multiple three up moons in your satchel there.
That was terrible, Purnell.
No, it wasn't. Fuck off. It was a three.
No, that was bad. That was real bad. Just
hush up.
You're not even ahead.
Nope. I'm gonna keep going till I crash. Yeah. Shrooking.
Well, that's too late for that.
And then it'll be good that you have the three up moon because you crashed, and then
that's right. See, I can come back. I have more lives.